Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to First Contact Radio. My name is Martin Horst. I'm your host speaking. And I have a very special guest today, which I had earlier on the show in 2011. And Gerard Aertsen is his name. He just wrote a new book, The Space Brothers, Here to Help. And Gerard Aertsen, which is a Dutch master in education, has been a student of the Ages Wisdom, teaching for over 30 years. His many years of research resulted in the online reference Our Elder Brothers Return, A History in Books. A long-standing co-worker in the worldwide network of groups affiliated with British esotericist Benjamin Green, he writes regular contributions to Share International magazine about the extraterrestrial presence on Earth. He is also a frequent guest on international radio stations like this one about UFOs and related subjects, and he gives lectures at home and abroad. So, Gerard, I want to welcome you to the show. It's really an honor to have you again.
Well, thank you very much, Maarten. It's a real pleasure to be back.
Yes. First of all, Gerard, I want to apologize to you and to the listeners. I have quite a severe cold, so I have also a bit of fever, but I thought that it was important to let this show continue because it was planned for a couple of weeks. So, in fact, I would like to ask you if you can talk as much as you want, and I will not ask so many questions. But on the cover of the book, it's written, "Life is one, so live as one or perish." So maybe you can, I read your book, it's wonderful. Your first book was wonderful as well, because of the wisdom of Benjamin Cream and the wisdom of the elder brothers that were taught to George Adamski. So in fact, I would like you to speak about your book and to uncover what you want to uncover. And I will just listen and give you as much time as you want in this show.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And first and foremost for having the show continue, go on as planned, despite your fever. Much appreciated.
Because I think it's important, you know, the work that you do and the information that you gather in your book is very complete.
And well, thank you.
I think we are beyond proving the facts that they exist. And we have now to go, and what you're doing, in fact, is to talk about their teachings, the teachings from the elder brothers. And that's fascinating.
Yes, well, thanks. The text that you just read, short text from the cover of my book, is really how I summarized what I've learned of the teachings and the information coming from the space people. Life is one, so live as one or perish. As you say, quite rightly, I think, the fact of the existence of, or the reality, I should say, of the flying saucers. I hesitate to use the word UFOs anymore because people will say, oh yes, there are UFOs. We just don't know what they are. They're unidentified, but it doesn't mean they're extraterrestrial. Whereas I think there are so many witness accounts now that testify to the unearthly abilities of these craft, clearly operated by an intelligence that is apparently not out to conquer us, and they have a superior technology. They have been seen. There was this spectacular press conference in 2010, September 2010, of I think seven former or active and or active army officials from the United States Army who worked on nuclear launch bases, stating that they have seen these craft hovering over the silos where the nuclear warheads are stored, switching through their technology, switching these things off. And they are convinced that they could have done a lot more damage, but they didn't. So I think there's no question at all as to the reality of the extraterrestrial presence, the craft and the people that fly them, that operate them. Mm-hmm. And that's why in my book I move right on in the first chapter to the question, why are they here? And in order to answer that question, there are bookstores, shelf after shelf after shelf, of books have been written by now since the first books came out in the early 1950s. And listeners may may know or may not know that it really all started, basically, I mean, it started big time with the books by George Adamski. The first one co-authored with Desmond Leslie, who gave a historic overview of the UFO flying saucer phenomenon, going back all the way to ancient times, as recorded in the Hindu Vedas and the Old Testament in the Bible. And he gave a really a masterful overview of historically recorded sightings of what we would now call flying saucers or motherships. And of course, with the second part written by George Adamski about his first encounter in the desert in November 1952, that's when it all started. And in order to look at that question, why are they here? I believe it is important, it is essential to go back to the early contactees. George Adamski was the most well-known, was the most famous one, and therefore also the most ridiculed person. But there were other contactees, some of whom apparently had their experiences before Adamski's experience started. But they only came out with their stories after Adamski's books were published. The first one I mentioned, Flying Saucers Have Landed, co-written with Desmond Leslie. The second one, in which he elaborated on his experiences and his meetings with people from Venus and from Mars, called Inside the Spaceships. And I think that is the seminal book when it comes to the extraterrestrial intentions, the intentions of the space people to come to Earth.
Yes, you have written a special chapter in your new book aboard the spaceships, which I found very interesting and well documented.
Yes, I actually named that chapter in as a kind of tribute to George Adamski's book Inside the Spaceships. Although it's not just about, or hardly at all about Adamski's book, because in that chapter I've collected all the information that I was able to find about the technology of the space people in terms of how they built their underground bases, what their ships are made of, or say the physical planes on which their ships exist, and which is the reason why they can drop into and out of our range of vision at will, and also the technology that they've shared with us up till now. There's a whole host of sources that I managed to tap into. And perhaps it's interesting for listeners to know that a lot of the information that has been known in the English-speaking world through books that were written in English or translated in English, I managed to support with quotations from Italian and Spanish sources that have not been translated before and that were not available in the English language. And I also uncovered photographs of extraterrestrial pilot and the interior of a spaceship.
That's why
I called that one chapter Inside the Spaceships.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Gerard. On page 112 and 113 are photos from inside a flying saucer. And they explain the attributes of the a kind of ball, a sphere in the middle, in the center of the craft, how it operates. And maybe you can explain a bit about the technology, because there's a column of gravity, and there was a picture taken in Switzerland, with not the whole craft on the picture, but just a column where they manipulate the gravitation or field.
Yeah, the gravity fields. Well, yes, you're actually mentioning quite a few things in one question. The photographs of the interior of a flying saucer I found in a book by an Italian consul, Alberto Perego. He was a consul during his active life. I think he died in something like 1993. But he wrote about he wrote four books about UFOs, or mainly about reports on UFO sightings. And these books are fairly rare, except for one. And the one that I took these photographs from, reproduced these photographs from, is especially rare, as you can imagine. And because it's never been translated, these photographs were not known in the English-speaking world until I reproduced them in my book. And yes, in the center of the ship, the photographs show a table. And on top of the table, there's a globe, a sphere. And Perego, Alberto Perego, he did not make the photographs himself, but he received them through an acquaintance. And yes, it's also important to note that Alberto Perego, the consul, the diplomat, and the photographer, whom I believe was Bruno Ghibaudi, an aviation journalist who was well known at the time in Italy, they were two of the more well-known Italians involved in the friendship case that has become well-known through a book that was published translated into English in 2009, so that was fairly recent, called Mass Contacts. Half of that book is about the Spanish UMO case, and the other half is about the Italian friendship case. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite significant that book has been translated into English.
Translated the book? Was that Paula Harris, by the way?
I think it was Paula, yes.
Yeah, I had Paula on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Yes. So she made it possible for that book to appear in English. And the book was written by a psychologist, another rather... prominent Italian involved in the friendship case. The main part about the friendship case in that book was written by Bruno Samisiccia, psychologist, and it was compiled by someone else who was not very much involved with the friendship case, and his name was Stefano Breccia. And he just recently passed away, I think late last year. And I've been told there's a second book in preparation by Stefano Breccia, but that is not available in English yet. And anyway, it's good to go back to the photographs. There's this table in the center of the flying saucer with a sphere on top of it. And Alberto Perego gave the following details that he received from one of the photographers. He says, there's a kind of table in the center surmounted by a sphere that pulsates light at intervals. It seems that the sphere showed the position of the disk in relation to the planet and that an enlarged view of the flyover area is shown on the table. And then the photographs show, if you would put them in sequence, will show a sort of a panoramic view of the craft. And further on in the few pages, further in the chapter, there's a photograph that I received permission from Share International magazine, edited by Benjamin Cram, whom you also mentioned, that was sent to Share International magazine of a huge cylindrical object. That was photographed in February 2010, so that's 3 years ago now. almost to the day, no, because it was the 19th of February 2010, a 100 meter long cylindrical object. And apparently, according to the eyewitnesses who took the photograph, there was a 50 meters high dome at the top of the column, as well as a bubble shape near the ground. And it shows extraordinary intricate detail. And the what I think the photograph shows is only because Benjamin Kranz-Master has explained that it's a kind of an X-ray of the internal structure of a ship. So it doesn't show the hull of the ship. The space people in this case apparently just made the anti-gravity column of the ship visible for the people to photograph. And that's what you see in the photograph. It's a huge column standing upright, and there's you can see the rounded off the bottom of it round near the ground, and the top of the column doesn't fit the photograph. So it's huge and quite mysterious. But with Benjamin Kram's explanation, this is a picture of apparently an anti-gravity column in spaceships that was also described by George Adamski and other contactees.
Mm-hmm. Gerard, I want to ask you about George Adamski and Benjamin Kram. Benjamin Kram has the esoteric wisdom about the Maitreya, the master teacher who will return in those times we live. That's another part of your book where you speak about the wisdom from the masters. Can you update the listeners about what you wrote in the book about the wisdom from the Maitreya who will return?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, the information from Benjamin Kram is that the world teacher, whose personal name is Maitreya, so we call him Maitreya without the article there. He has been back in the world since 1977, and he has been gradually preparing his open emergence into full public view since that time. And he's currently engaged in a series of interviews around the world, starting 2 years ago in the United States. And he's so far given something like 87 interviews in all in the United States, in Mexico, in Brazil, and he's recently started giving interviews in Russia. These really form the final stage of the preparations for his emergence, which will lead to the day of declaration, where he will make himself known to the world by overshadowing everyone at the same time, mentally overshadowing all the people in the world, to give his message internally. So by mental telepathy. And as he overshadows the whole of the world population at the same time, the English native English speakers will hear him in English, and the Russians will hear him in Russian, and the Dutch will hear him in Dutch, and the Japanese in Japanese, and the Portuguese in Portuguese, etc., etc. Everyone in their own language, because it goes through a telepathic rapport. And there will be other things like hundreds of thousands of miraculous healings at the same time. And here the energy of love, of which he is the embodiment on this planet, will stream out in unprecedented potency. And by these three things, Benjamin Kram says, we will know that this man, and only this man, is the world teacher, Maitreya. And really, what I think I uncovered in my book by looking at the statements of the early contactees is that the coming of the space people and in their craft is not an event in itself. It's not to mystify humanity on this planet. They are here in support of this historic event of the return of the world teacher. We've had world teachers or teachers come into the world in previous ages. Every age, according to the Ages of Wisdom teaching, is inaugurated by a teacher. So, you know, we're talking about people in the likes of Krishna and Buddha and Christ and Muhammad and people that have only survived in myths like Hermes and Hercules and others. So it's a well known concept, the doctrine of the coming one. But this time, the world teacher, because the world is globalized now, we have international communications, we have instant global communications. So there's nothing that could happen on one side of the planet without the rest of the planet knowing about it. So this time, the teacher will come for the whole of humanity, and that's for the first time in the history of humanity. It's for the first time in the history of humanity that we have this global consciousness about what happens on the planet and the state of the planet and the state of humanity, where two-thirds of the population live in abject poverty and many people still die of hunger every day, while an increasingly small group of people own more and more of the wealth of the world through the economic power that they have. So it is to restore freedom and justice for everyone that humanity has to make this choice, this decision that will be presented by the world teacher. He's the world teacher. He's coming to teach us, to advise, to inspire us, together with the whole group of his brothers, the masters of wisdom. But we have to make the decision. We have to make the choice. Our free will not be infringed. And we will have to do the work. We have made a mess of this planet, and we will have to clean it up. There's going to be no salvation project on the part of the space people or the masters of wisdom. They will inspire us, and they will give us the knowledge that we need and the wisdom, and the space people are ready to and standing by with technology that might be useful. But we have to do the work, and the UFOs are here and have been coming here since, especially, I mean, they've been here for millennia. In fact, since the dawn of humanity on this planet, 18.5 million years ago, but especially since the end of the Second World War, in support of the return into the everyday world of the Masters of Wisdom and the World Teacher, Maitreya, at their head.
Yes, and then there are also wisdom teachers like where I read about, like Ashtar and Archangel Michael and Saint Germain. Are they also involved in this group of wisdom teachers?
Well, you know, you ask me, so I'll give you my view on this. There are very many claims, a lot of claims, an endless amount of claims of people who say they channel information from higher sources that has been going on ever since Madame Blavatsky started to give out the teachings of the masters in the late 19th century. Mm-hmm. And I personally believe you have to be really careful because it's a minefield. You know, there's a lot of this kind of channeled information is coming from the astral planes, where mm-hmm. there are all kinds of astral entities, but they are not real masters. They are not real entities. And I believe it's up to people themselves to distinguish the quality of the teachings that they hear. For instance, Saint-Germain is the name that one of the masters used during his manifestation in Europe over, I think, the course of almost two centuries. The Master Rakoczy, who is the European master. And Saint-Germain was one of his appearances, I believe, towards the end of that manifestation. But he has never, according to my information, and that's based on, you know, the information from Benjamin Graham and Alice Bailey, who are people who are working or have been working under direct supervision and cooperation with a master of wisdom. Saint-Germain never uses channelers or mediums or psychics or whatever you want to call them to give his teachings to the world. He's never given direct teachings. But again, you know, you ask me, so I give you my view on this. But I believe it's up to people, you know, listeners, to make their own decision on this. I think the safest is to stick with the teachings that we can be sure are from the Masters of Wisdom, through Helena Blavatsky, through Helena Rerich, the Agni Yoga teachings, through Alice Ann Bailey, and Benjamin Graham, and there's a few other individuals that they worked through in the past 130 years. Mm-hmm. But not nearly as many people as claim to be receiving information from the Masters. So okay. You know, you have to be careful in accepting people's claims.
Yes. Well, I'm a journalist, so I'm open for many views, of course. But the view of the master teachers is, I must say, very interesting, because I have read your first book that you sent me in 2011 and your second book, and the teachings from especially George Adamski about the Venusians who visited him. This is very high knowledge, and you cannot ignore it. And what I would like to know, Gerard, is the knowledge you have from Benjamin Graham, that when the event happens, that he will make himself known to the world. Will that also be the disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence on Earth?
I believe Benjamin Graham has said something about that, and I believe that will be the case, because if we look at the evidence, there's been so many sightings, and I think it's safe to say that, especially since 2007, there's been an exponential increase in sightings,
mm-hmm.
Of extraterrestrial craft. And if people who now insist on denying the reality of these craft and the presence of the extraterrestrials, I think they are, you know, either professional liars because they've been hired by the media or the military or whichever interests are behind that denial, or deluded. You know, they delude themselves. They don't allow themselves to accept reality as hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have been seeing it over the last couple of decades. So the reality is out of the question. And the sightings have been so plentiful, where at the same time governments, especially the United States government and the government of Great Britain, insist on denying that they know anything, that I find it very unlikely that these governments will come forward and say, we're sorry, we've been lying to you all this time, or we've been covering up all this information for all these years. I don't see that happening, despite the very well meant attempts of activists with petitions, etc., to disclose the information. It's interesting, yeah, the way that a documentary, I don't remember what year it came out, I think maybe as early as 2004, about disclosure in South America. The documentary is called UFOs in South America. It can be seen for free on YouTube, and it's really interesting to see what governments have been sharing with researchers in that continent, South America. It's really fascinating.
And there's a friend of me, which will be on the show soon, Gerard. Maybe it's interesting for you to listen as well. His name is Jaime Musan, and he is a Mexican.
Jaime Musan.
He's on national television in Mexico, and he speaks openly about the presence of UFOs there.
Yes, he has a well-known television show there, Tercer Milenio, in which he researches all kinds of cases. Yeah, he's of course not a government official or a government researcher, but it's quite notable. It's quite remarkable that his show is so big in Mexico.
Yes, I invited him to ET First Contact Radio, and I was reading your book, Gerard. By the way, this is Martin Horst speaking on ET First Contact Radio. If you're just coming in to listen, my guest is Gerard Aertsen, and he is talking about his latest book, UFOs and the Space People Here to Help, which is available on Amazon only for $15. It's really not a lot of money. And it's very well documented. And so, Gerard, I want to ask you, in your book, there is somebody who I would like to interview, but I don't have his details, but I forgot the name. We'll ask you later. But it has to do with Adamski's knowledge. I forgot his name. He did really very deep research into the wisdom of George Adamski.
Do you mean Timothy Good?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Timothy Good is I think one of the best known UK researchers in the field of ufology, and in one of his books, Alien Base, he devotes two chapters to Adamski, not so much to the wisdom teachings that Adamski received, but to the reality of his contacts, and some of his conclusions are really remarkable for a researcher of his stature. He actually says that he acknowledged that he has his own prejudices, but he says there's no denying that a lot of what Adamski has said is not only reality, is true, but you know, it cannot be denied, but it's also more relevant now than it was 40 years ago, and that's exactly what I'm trying to show in my book, that the statements from the early contactees, and especially Adamski, because he's always been the one to stick with the facts that he started out saying and giving out in his books, and he's never changed his story. And of course, his information came out before the government started the massive disinformation campaign in the mid-1950s.
Unearthly disclosure.
That's another of Timothy Good's book. But the one about where he writes about Adamski is Alien Base.
If you have his contact details, I would like to you to share.
I can give you his email. Yes.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Because you know, because people like yourself, Gerard, that write those kind of wonderful books, I got a chance to meet other people on my radio show and bring the news out. So, in fact, we are all helping each other, aren't we?
I understand. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I'll be happy to give you Timothy Good's email.
Okay.
Where was I? Yeah, Timothy Good. He has documented a lot of interesting things in his book about Adamski. And what I find interesting is that the information that came out through Adamski and some of the other contactees before the contamination, the misinformation, the feeding of the misinformation to the public by the government and the military. That information is, I think, the most reliable. And if you want to know what is, if you want some kind of reference framework for later publications, to check in later publications what might be true or not, I think the best thing is to go back to the stories of the early contactees, find the commonalities in their stories, and then you have this framework against which you can compare the stories of later contactees, because I'm sure there are, in fact, there are so many cases of people who have met the space people, but for one reason or another, their stories have been elaborated or have been embroidered or have been contaminated with misinformation, usually to scare or confuse the public about the reality and the intentions of the space people. Mm-hmm. And in order to get a purer, a more unbiased and clearer view of their intentions, I think the first place to look is the stories of the early contactees. And from there, you know, you can sift through the enormous amounts of nonsense and misinformation to get to the core of things. And the interesting thing that I found through my research is that the message that I put on the cover of my book, which is, you know, my own words, I put my own words to it, but life is one, so live as one or perish. That message can be found in all the serious contact cases, where people had contact with people from space. And the interesting thing is that it's the same message that we find in all the major religions on our own planet. And I've actually added an appendix in my book where this golden rule, or the law of harmlessness, is included from, I think, about 11 or 13 major religions on Earth, in all the different forms, do not do to others what you do not want done to yourself. Treat not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Mm-hmm. So it's that law of harmlessness, the golden rule, that the space people have told their contacts, and they are telling us, just as the masters and the world teacher Maitreya are telling us, and the crises in the world are telling us, look at the state of the planet, look at the state of the human family. We're brothers and sisters in the same, you know, on the same planet, sharing the same planet, and look what you're doing to yourselves. Look what we are doing to ourselves. We are making the planet uninhabitable. It's in a hurry. If we don't change our ways, the planet will become a very, very hard and harsh place to live in the span of 15 or 20 years. There will be irreversible damage, if it's not irreversible already. There's already 20 to 30,000 people dying of hunger every day, not because there's no food, but just because they don't have the money to buy the food, because everything is based on an economic system that creates injustice and therefore creates conflict and greed and fear and inequality. So either we come to the realization very soon now, in really fast, that we are one human family, because we are all an expression of the one life, universal life, and therefore we have to act on that realization and begin to cooperate on an international level, international scale, to create the trust that is needed to share the resources of the world, to share the energy sources in the world, and the technology and healthcare and education, to make sure that everyone can live a humane life, have the basic necessities for life, and have a prospect for their future and the future of their children. Or if we continue in our current ways, in continued along the, you know, the following blindly the market forces into more greed, more competition, more conflict, we will destroy ourselves. And it won't take very long to destroy ourselves because we have nuclear weapons. We have plenty of conflicts already around the planet. And the planet itself is moaning under the duress of the pollution and the pillaging of the natural resources. So that's why I phrased the information coming from the space people as I did on the cover of my book. Life is one, so live as one. Or perish. We have to cooperate. We have to share to create justice and freedom for everyone around the world. We cannot have exceptions.
Well, Gerard, I cannot agree with you more. And I want to ask you about the last chapter in your book. I'm sorry, I have the Dutch version, but it says apocalypse or openbaarmaking. In English, it means the disclosure. Everything according to plan. What I read that you have written a part from Erwin Laszlo, the Hungarian scientist. I went to a lecture from him in Amsterdam back in 2003. He is the founder of a club from Budapest and a club of Rome, of course.
He was founder of the Club of Budapest that was modeled after the Club of Rome.
Yes, yes, I know that. But what does he know about the extraterrestrial presence?
That was interesting. He was on Dutch TV at the end of 2006. I believe, or 2008, about his theory, his chaos theory. What was it? The chaos point, I think he calls it.
In his book Cosmic Vision, he explains about it.
Right. And when I looked up the interview again, because I was quite impressed with it, and I found it quite inspiring, I also found an interview on Disclose TV, on the internet, with another Dutch journalist who interviewed him and got him to disclose his personal knowledge of the extraterrestrial presence. And he actually said that he had access to information about contacts with the extraterrestrials, but he also said that he was not allowed to talk about it very much. But he did say, and he declined to give any details because he said they will never tell me anything anymore. But he did say, I am certain that contact has been made. And this is a philosopher, as you say, you know, he's a philosopher of science. He's a systems theorist and an integral theorist. And he developed a theory of the universe as a living creature. So, yes, it's quite significant that he is in the know about the extraterrestrial presence. And when you look through my book, it is, and I made a compilation, in fact, that I've also put on Facebook and other places, a compilation of quotations of all kinds of dignitaries and officials, including Erwin Laszlo, but also the Italian diplomat that I mentioned, Alberto Perego, Pope John the 23rd, was actually mentioned in one of the major newspapers yesterday about in a report about the secrets of the Vatican.
I saw that on your Facebook. It was in the Dutch newspaper, the Volkskrant.
Correct, yes. And many, many other dignitaries and officials who have made positive statements that the extraterrestrial presence is real and that their intentions are positive, that they are not here to conquer, and when you see these quotations in, you know, together, in relation to each other, then it's really quite an impressive body of confirmations from these higher people that the ET presence is real and benign, and still the media deny it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very strange.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, the facts are so clear now. The governments know it. In fact, I think the media itself knows it. But hopefully, you know, that this citizens' hearing on disclosure, did you hear about it? It will happen in April or in May?
Yes, I heard about it, and that's the question you asked me, and that I think I didn't completely answer your question about that, because you asked me about disclosure and do I think it will happen anytime soon. I think with all the denial that is still going around, despite the evidence. And despite the statements of all these dignitaries and officials to the contrary, I think it will require the open emergence or the emergence into full public view of the World Teacher and the Masters of Wisdom, who are the elder brothers of humanity and who are really our exemplars and mentors, showing us the way forward on the path of evolution. Only after they have made themselves known and have become known to the world will it become common knowledge that the extraterrestrials are here, that we have brothers and sisters on every other planet throughout the universe. The visitors from space, I believe, are from the planets in our own solar system, because as I argue also in the final chapter of my book, it doesn't make much sense to have them come all the way from star systems that are evolved far, far beyond our fairly simple solar system, when there are so many things for us to learn from brothers and sisters from the higher planets in our own solar system, because the solar system functions and evolves as a unit. And of course, there are planets that are more evolved and other planets that are less evolved. But we're brothers and sisters all. And the ones on the more highly evolved planets, such as Venus and Mercury and Saturn, have so much to teach us that it doesn't really make much sense for space people to come from the Pleiades or other star systems that are evolved far, far beyond our solar system. So
They're welcome, of course, also, but it makes of course more sense that our neighboring planets will come and visit us first.
That they are here and are visiting us before any of the others would do so. And So Benjamin Graham, in fact, has said that when Maitreya gives his worldwide declaration about who he really is, by the time he will be a familiar face on television screens, giving advice to politicians, not only, but to everyone, really. Everyone has to pull their weight in turning around the fate of our planet and saving it from destruction, and creating the trust to share and cooperate. Only then, says Benjamin Graham, can we expect the acknowledgement from the governments after the World Teacher has said and confirmed to us that the extraterrestrial presence is real. And only then will governments follow. I think it's at least governments like the United States and the UK, because other governments have already opened up. And I'm sure you've seen online also the reports about President Medvedev of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Making very interesting statements about the knowledge that the presidents in Russia receive about the extraterrestrial presence.
Yes, I've seen it, Gerard. Yes, I must tell you, that my gut feeling also says that the world teacher or the ascended masters, I leave it in the middle, but they will come first to bring us disclosure. And because I think because of the governments from the United States and other countries have lied for over 60, 70 years, they will not be able to admit it. So first comes the world teacher to bring us disclosure. I agree with you, but that's my gut feeling.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that makes sense, because if the governments would step forward now, you know, they would be committing political suicide, as Benjamin Graham says. And I mean, it's only it only follows from what they've done for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are already at the top of the hour almost. My guest was Gerard Aertsen, master in education, and he has been a student of the Ages Wisdom teachings for over 30 years. His new book is called UFOs and the Space People Here to Help. And we had a very interesting conversation.
English, the other way around. The English title is Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, yes. Well, I looked it up on Amazon. But I want to thank you for sending the copy. But next time I have you on the show and you have a third book on your hand, it will be wise to send it in English like you did the first time.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay, because this is an international show. And this is Maarten Horst on ET First Contact Radio. If you want to help me to continue the show, please donate at bbsradio.com/ET First Contact Radio. And Gerard, I want to thank you for being on the show. And it was a very interesting conversation we had indeed.
Thank you very much, Maarten, for having me. And thank you especially for having me despite your feeling ill. Yes. It was a great pleasure. Thanks very
indeed.
Much.
And I'm sure you will not sit still in the coming time. And there will come another book from your hand. And you're always welcome to be on the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Goodbye, Gerard.
Bye-bye. Bye.